Welcome to the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast with your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor-in-chief of the Mill Creek View newspaper.
Welcome back to the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast. In studio and loving it here with producer Steve in Washington. We are focused on the volunteer state and our nation today, with always an interesting person making a positive change in our community. This time, special guest Tom Antkow. But first, for more information about the Mill Creek View podcast, visit us anywhere you get your podcasts and socials at Mill Creek View, Tennessee. While you're there, please subscribe. Welcome to our People in the News episode, where I interview people who are making an impact and are lovers of truth. Today, we are talking with Tom Antkow. Before moving to Maryville, Tennessee, Tom lived in Colorado Springs, Colorado, where he hosted his own daily radio show on KCSF AM 1300 and co-hosted talk shows for KVOR AM 740 for Cumulus Broadcasting. He is currently a freelance writer and produced and president at Driver Safety Consultants AutoDriverServices.com. He has been a driver safety, driver rehabilitation specialist, and certified clinical driving evaluator for over 30 years. Hello, Tom. How are you today?
I'm great, Steve. Thank you very much. Let me kind of correct a couple of things.
Please.
The last name is Antkow.
Antkow.
So it's actually Ukrainian and Polish, so I have my little Ukrainian pin on most of the time. It is Maryville. You have to learn how to talk like an East Tennessean.
So. Maryville. Okay, you got me on two things. With a name like Abramowitz, I do my best. And then I am new to Tennessee, so I still have to learn that Blount County is not Blount and Maryville is not Maryville.
Well, I tell you what, I learned that really quick when I moved out here for the first time. So
yeah, it makes a difference when you actually live there versus Williamson County. We all get that pretty easy.
There you go. So anyway, thank you so much for your invitation. And as I told you earlier, I really appreciate the fact that you've read my pieces on Substack. There have been several publications in the Tennessee Conservative. So if you Google or search for my last name, A-N-T-K-O-W, on Tennessee Conservative, you'll see other pieces. I've written for the Knoxville News Sentinel. I've written for the Daily Times in Maryville. So I'm all over the place, and I really appreciate the exposure on your show. So thank you very much.
Let's have some fun talking about you. So tell us about your radio show when you had it. What did you enjoy most about that?
Well, it was a conservative talk radio call-in show. It was called Tell the Drive Guy. And I did, I covered a lot of different topics, but my specialty is as a traffic safety specialist. My company out here as a clinical evaluator in Maryville is Adult Driver Services. What I deal with is primarily issues of aging and senior drivers, trying to make the streets a little bit safer. And also work with people who might be suffering from pre-dementia, dementia, Alzheimer's, cognitive disorders, Parkinson's disease, when their safety level or their liability, there might be liability issues for them operating a motor vehicle. I'm the person between the doctor and the DMV and the family members. I counsel with the seniors. I evaluate them clinically as well as do a performance evaluation in car behind the wheel. For several years, as you may or may not, I think you do know this, I've been a driver educator since 1973. I've done a lot of different things. I've been blessed to live in several different states and see a lot of changes in the United States and the country. That's why I'm a staunch conservative thinker. And in 1999, 3 days before Christmas, my daughter, Melissa, who was also 4 months pregnant and my only child, was killed at the hands of a teenage driver who had only had their license for 6 weeks and was driving a borrowed vehicle, ran a red light and T-boned my daughter's car. And she was on life support for 3 days before she passed away.
Oh, God.
And that sent me on a 21-year mission to help save lives by opening up a driving school and focusing a lot on teenagers and distracted driving, as well as I did with the spectrum. So I deal with autism and autistic kids, specifically Asperger's. So I did a lot of things.
You sure did. And so you've been around a while. So let me ask you this question. The 55-mile-an-hour speed limit has been around since Jimmy Carter needed us to conserve fuel. Tennessee wants to raise that level to 75 now, up from, I think, 70 on most interstates. How do you feel about that?
I really don't have a problem with it. We know that speed kills. People are going to, the unfortunate thing about driving, there's two things that are really sad. Number one, most American drivers, and I've lived in a, probably visited at least 49 out of the 50 states, drivers in all aspects of the United States are poorly trained. Driver education is generally a thing of the past in most of the high schools. The speed limit, and I don't have a problem with it because I'm a firm believer that, you know, you have freedom of choice. If you're going to choose to speed and take that kind of risk, it's better to do it by yourself than to take other people down a dangerous road with you. I don't have a problem with that at all.
Yeah, and I'm not so sure speed is what's killing most folks. It's probably distracted driving or just proper improper training on it. But before we get into all that, how did you like your move to Tennessee from Colorado? Quite different states.
Yeah, it was a culture shock, but I grew up in a small town in New York State on Long Island, actually. And, you know, a lot of people say, oh, you're from New York. You're one of them city boys. No, I'm not a city boy. The town that I grew up in was founded in the 1600s by the Dutch. And that's where we got Henry Hudson going up the Hudson River. And the South Shore of Long Island was settled by Indians, and they were an agrarian society. So when I moved out here, it was like being back home where I grew up. Even the conservative culture out here was similar to where I grew up in New York State. So we had property. My wife, Donna, and I had property up in Cherokee Lake outside of Morristown for several years. And we would come out and visit Knoxville often because we had 5 free days a year to stay on in a what they called the manor house up in Cherokee Lake. And so we got an opportunity to really see what was like out here. After living at 6,500 feet above sea level on the front range of the Rocky Mountains overlooking Pikes Peak, it was kind of nice to get away from freezing weather. I mean, I lived in New York, I lived in Arizona, I lived in San Diego, so I was in warm weather climates for a lot, and it was kind of nice to get back into a more temperate area. And plus, the people out here are fantastic. I just love the people in Tennessee.
Nice.
So hopefully that answers your question.
It does. And you had an issue recently with Tennessee, the legislature, and we're in the news for it. The headline was medical marijuana gains unexpected momentum in Tennessee, now with top GOP supporter. Coming from Colorado, let's say, or even maybe parts of New York, the liberal-minded mindset versus what you thought is coming here in Tennessee, did that issue in particular strike you as a little odd for a red or conservative state?
Well, you know, unfortunately, it's all about the money. I'm going to be very frank with you. When I was a teenager, my father was a police officer. I did a lot of things behind his back. The culture in the 60s was smoking dope. I was actually an attendee at Woodstock. I don't know how proud I am of saying that because it was a miserable time. And it took us 18 hours to get there. So personal use of marijuana, I don't have a problem with. I have a problem when it gets in the way of, well, it brings crime and homelessness. A lot of negative things come along with legalization. I'm not a Greg Gutfeld who believes that you should legalize all drugs. I lived in Colorado where they, interestingly enough, it was two brothers that actually grew a hybrid form of marijuana to kind of extract the CBD oil, which they found was beneficial in stopping or at least treating seizure disorders in youngsters. I was kind of, one of the reasons I left Colorado, to be honest with you, is when they legalized recreational marijuana in the state, and Colorado Springs was the only city in the state that did not allow it because of all of the military bases, it brought in a lot of things that we were warning against. And there was a liberal lobby in Colorado. Obviously, most of the northern part of Colorado is very liberal. It brought in super gangs. If you don't know what a super gang is, that is where gang members were actually recruiting their members to go and join the military so they can be trained in tactical warfare and then come back and wreak havoc on the community. We had drug cartels, illegal grow operations, a lot of homeless, which found it was easier to conceal you know, a couple of joints, and it was to conceal the big bottle of liquor. And it just brought a whole mess of problems, including teens and kids getting their hands on it. And there's a lot of overdoses on gummies, which they were eating like candy. So there's a lot of negative things. So I know it's going to unfortunately be on the way here in Colorado, in Tennessee. It's already in CBD dispensaries, which, by the way, they're just kind of, you know, modifying a little bit to a Schedule A drug. People are smoking it. They're smoking it already out here. And they're taking that CBD and they're making it seemed like it was the you know, the magical treatment for every ailment on the planet.
Yeah.
I don't know if we can stop it. I think what we should do is we should make it legal but dispensed only in pharmacies by prescription only, which again has another a bit of its problem by unscrupulous doctors in Colorado were selling the red cards. When somebody came in with an ache and pain, they said, "Yeah, well, yeah, I'm going to give you a prescription for marijuana, and you can smoke that. It'll take care of your arthritis." There's a lot of negative things and a lot of illegal things happening behind the scenes that unfortunately come along with all of the wonderful tax dollars.
Yeah, our fathers or grandfathers or our marijuana. This is a psychotic drug, actually, that is a gateway to a lot of other terrible things. And some of the psychosis that we've seen in some of the killers have actually been linked back to the extra potent marijuana that they have. I found it interesting when I was doing a little homework on you. The mayor's race in Colorado Springs that's coming up next month has basically two developers against each other for the first time in 8 or 12 years. I can't remember that they've had a mayor opening, and it's really one developer versus the other. And then the legislature decided we were going to section off a piece of Colorado Springs to not be able to be developed. So we're going to have two developers, whichever one wins, one developer against the legislature who's saying don't grow, and they're going to say, well, that's my job is to develop. So that's going to be very interesting for that town. And a former Benghazi survivor actually is running too, but I think he's a distant third or fourth. You didn't have the best of beginnings in the new state. Someone had sent a fraudulent claim against your company. There was no response from the legislature or from, I guess, your elected officials. Did you get it all resolved?
I finally did after a piece ran from one of the reporters in Knoxville. What was happening, and it wasn't just me. Before I moved out to Tennessee, I opened up a P.O. box. I joined the Chamber of Commerce. So my P.O. box address was used as a physical address as well as a drop box for mail. What was happening is this Department of Safety and Homeland Security, the unemployment division, they were sending out claims for uninsurance claims for benefits to my business, stating that they were fired by my company, which, by the way, was only me, and I had no employees out here. And I kept sending them back, and they weren't doing anything about it. But I found out later, after the piece ran on one of the local Knoxville channels, that there was hundreds of people getting these letters with false claims. And it turns out that in Nashville, there was an operation going where they were sending out fraudulent unemployment insurance claims. And it was a major problem. Now, finally, the state of Tennessee addressed the issues, the Department of TENTAP, they call it, which is Tennessee Department of Revenue, basically. And all of a sudden, they stopped coming, but then I closed down the P.O. box anyway. So they didn't have my real address. So yeah, it was a pain in the butt. I was really worried to get letters from the state. I don't like any letters from the state of anybody.
And you were able to disclose IRS. That they only gave you 7 days to respond to the claim.
Yeah, it was crazy. And then the interesting thing is, because it was a P.O. box, it wasn't that far from my house, but I rarely checked it because I rarely got mail. So a lot of the times those pieces had gone beyond their termination date, and they kept coming and coming and coming.
I'm sure the bad guys banked on that. They knew that people were not going to pay attention.
They knew it exactly. It was a real big scam, and it was in the entire state, not just in Maryville.
Well, thankfully you were able to help undo that. You shared with your readers, and again, you have a Substack, about the pending euthanasia of your adopted child and beloved companion, Buttons. I can't watch movies like Old Yeller or Where the Red Fern Grows books, Marley and Me, anything where a dog dies. I love dogs. I can't do it. I've had been through it a couple times in real life. Love my current lab. That must have been hard for you, obviously.
it was, I love animals. There's a big backstory, which I don't have time to go into with regards to Buttons, but it was a replacement for a dog that we lost, that we had just adopted from the pound, who passed away. And my wife found this dog dead when I was on a business trip, and she was devastated. So I did something about a replacement. And by the way, I'll mention this now because I hope people will hate puppy mills as much as I do. There's an organization out of Colorado Springs, believe it or not, called the National Mill Dog Rescue. And I just happened to stumble upon their site when I was looking for a replacement dog for Teddy. And Button's picture drew me to that website. And you had to go through an adoption process. You had to have a meet and greet with the dog. It was amazing. They had to inspect your yard to make sure that the mill dog wouldn't escape. They were, you know, these dogs were in cages for 5 years or 6 years. My dog Buttons was in a cage for almost 6 years, being bred twice a year. She had never been on grass. She had doggy agoraphobia when I took her to the park. They have a special team at the National Mill Dog Rescue that would actually go out and search for dogs that became runners because they didn't know what to do. They would panic because when you take them out of a cage and put them in an open space, they don't know what to do. But Buttons, it took quite a long time for that dog to become a dog. Never fetched, never ran after a ball, just was a loving, loving companion. It was my wife, Donna. She had never been married before. She had never had children. And so Buttons became her child. And she still is suffering, especially when we get a condolence card from somebody or somebody mentions it on Facebook. So thank you for asking. I think any pet lover that wants to do something positive to close down these mill dog places. This one happened to be in Missouri. They tried to shut it down. National Mill Dog actually goes out and rescues probably on each trip about 50 to 100 dogs. And then they take the hard job of caring for them and getting them medically treated, getting them spayed or neutered, and then finding a forever home for them. So it's a great organization, and they're always looking for support. I don't know if you've ever watched Dr. Jeff, Mountain Vet. We used to watch him all the time in Colorado. But Dr. Jeff he takes care of people that are indigent. He goes all over the world, and he spays and neuters animals to control the pet population. And he's a great contributor to the National Mill Dog Rescue, as well as a guy with a big heart. So anyway.
Yeah, those puppy mills are a bad deal. We've come a long way from the Daisy Hill puppy farm of Snoopy days, where we like to think that we're getting purebred, wonderful, well-treated, well-adjusted dogs. But we're actually sometimes getting quite a... Yeah, you bet. So as a 30-year veteran writer, are you finding great success with the new medium for writers, Substack?
I love Substack. I'm still getting used to how to get the word out. I'm learning a lot about it. My pieces are primarily published on Substack, which, by the way, is antco.substack.com. I had to throw that in.
Get another chance at the end.
There you go. I know. I love it. It's a good, I found that when I send in pieces to local newspapers, a lot of the times the editor who has a political opinion will realize that I'm coming from a conservative bent and not publish the piece or the letter that sends it. So Substack, fantastic for novice writers, especially to at least get exposure for their writing.
For example, you wrote about the latest dust-up surrounding the quote-unquote right of some LGBTQ plus groups to perform drag shows without restriction being considered by the Tennessee legislature right now as we speak. That banning law died in committee, actually, and some say what happened in Nashville on Monday was a direct result of the troubled individual lashing out about that. We'll see. What point did you make about... So I think it was celebrity impersonators mainly.
Yeah, well, we can. That's what we used to call them, celebrity impersonators. I mean, they were in Vegas. I lived in just outside of a gay community called Hillcrest in San Diego when I lived in California. A very, very. It was an interesting town. It was divided much the same that we are out here with Knoxville now is becoming kind of like San Diego. Conservative mayor, you might have heard of the name Roger Hedgecock. And the shows were called cabaret shows, and they did impersonations of female performers, but it was done in a setting that they had to have a liquor license to perform in that particular setting. It was a lot of fun. It was an interesting thing. It was controlled by the local community, especially from the noise complaints and things like that. And listen, I think to expose children to that type of thing, there's a lot of changes in our society. I mean, I grew up in an era where, you know, there was a certain amount of morality. Morality is kind of going down the tubes right now. You know, freedom, people claiming it's my freedom and it's my right to do these things. They're talking from a minority of the population who believes that way. But suddenly now we're finding that we're listening more to minorities than we are to the majority. Remember the old majority rules?
Yeah.
Cabaret shows were controlled in San Diego, which was obviously a Democrat state. And I think we should control them. Why do they have to expose school children? It makes no sense to me.
No, it's definitely a cultural moral decay that we talk about on the show quite a bit. You know, it went from the Paris Cabaret, as you called it, to La Cage aux Folles, to, you know, Birdcage with,
Birdcage,
you know,
yeah.
Robin Williams, who all the kids of all ages loved as a comedian and a clown, to now it's in the streets. And I agree, they should go after the liquor licenses of these bars and cause some real pain there for doing age inappropriate things, just like the library. You called out Republicans for being so darn polite. We call them Southern Rhinos or Dixiecrats, really. In Nashville, they do try to keep their down south decorum or chivalry, I suppose, working with some deranged Democrats, unfortunately. What did you have to say about that in the issue called I'm Rubber, You're Glue?
Well, you know, when I first moved out to Maryville, we had a house built. There's beautiful wooded area behind it. I mean, it's a very historical area that we live in. And within a couple of months, all of a sudden, we heard the chainsaws and the bulldozers. They came in and knocked all of the forest down. They scared the heck out of the animals. And they built 27 houses behind us. And the people that control the purse strings in Tennessee are usually the county commissioners. Mayors are strong. Governors are strong. But county commissioners in each, and there's 95 counties, I believe, is the number
99.
In Tennessee. And when I was out knocking, I decided I'm going to run for a county commission. It was an uphill battle, trust me. But I went out and knocked on doors, and I was amazed at how polite people were, but also how ignorant people were. Now, that's not a saying that you're stupid. I'm saying that ignorance is certainly bliss in the South, where they don't even know who a county commissioner was. They didn't know we had 21 commissioners in our county, 21. What the heck do you need 21 county commissioners for? But anyway, long story short, politeness is nice, but ignorance is worse. And a lot of Republican voters in the country, and I've lived in New York, Arizona, Illinois, San Diego, Arizona. I've been all over the place. And people, first of all, the voter turnout in most places is horrible. I got 30% of the vote of 800 and some odd votes out of like 35 or 4,000 registered voters in this particular election. I got 30% of 800 and some odd votes. And I told my friends, I said, gosh, if I can get a 30% return on my investments, I'll be happy. But nobody went out to vote. And that's so common.
Yeah.
That's why I find it hard to believe that Joe Biden got, I don't know how many millions more votes than Barack Obama. Which is another story. But I don't know if that would address your question, but...
Well, I do know there's 24 county commissioners in Williamson County. I've had three on, which is not even, just a little over 10%. But what I wanted you to discuss was your article, I'm Rubber, You're Glue.
Well, thank you. Now I have to pull it up and remember what it said. Can I refresh my memory?
It was about the Southern decorum and chivalry that the Republicans... use or maintain while dealing with the lunatics on the left. If we can move on, if you don't remember.
Yeah, move on because unfortunately I'm drawing a blank.
Well, here's a quote from you. Maybe this will refresh your memory on a different one. Wake up and open your eyes, conservative Republicans. Nazi 2.0 is alive and well. They do same to use the name They do the same to use the name Nazi against the right, obviously. But they were the National Socialist German Workers' Party, after all. So, but they sure try hard to often paint Republicans as Nazis.
Which, you know, interesting enough, that article only made it to Substack. It was bounced by all of the newspapers out here, primarily because I used the word Nazi.
Yeah.
The Hitler Youth, and this will tie in, and this is refreshing my memory from a memory I had from Colorado Springs during the elections there. The Hitler Youth were indoctrinated into, obviously, becoming Nazis. And that's what's happening in our society. We're indoctrinating our youth. And frankly, it happened in Colorado when Barack Obama was running for office. If you remember, he spoke almost primarily and exclusively at college campuses because they had the 18 to 25 vote was a big percentage of the population that voted for him. And they were actually renting houses. The Obama political machine was renting youth hostel houses all over Colorado and bringing in youngsters, 18 plus year old kids, and kind of indoctrinating them, much like the Nazis did for the Hitler Youth, bringing them in to go door to door and introduce the voters to this wonderful human being that was coming about to become president, was Barack Obama. And I see red flags in this state, but and the decorum is kind of preventing people from really seeing how insidious it is for what they're doing in our schools to the youth, what they are doing to indoctrinate them and almost make them little robots, and by kind of painting pie in the sky images of how great it would be if they voted for a particular candidate. Yeah. Does that kind of help?
Exactly right. And that's why Colorado and Washington State, where I'm sitting right now, but anxious to leave, were the first in the nation to legalize marijuana because it was pandering right to the youth. And then the kids have just been suffering ever since. Okay. As a Ukrainian American, how do you feel the war's going?
You know, I have mixed feelings. I have relatives over there. Well, now they've escaped to Poland. You know, God bless Tucker Carlson. There's, and a lot of rhinos, a lot of Republicans are against the funding for the Ukrainian conflict, which I find amazing to me. I mean, what would they rather do, send American troops over there? I mean, we have the ability to send mechanized equipment to the Ukrainians to help them defend themselves. And I thought that's what it was all about. Let them defend themselves. The Russians, I mean, that poor, if you read about the Ukraine, that's the breadbasket of Eastern Europe. And there's been a lot of problems in that particular area and wrestling of back and forth, who belongs there, who doesn't belong there. The Russians are claiming that it's theirs and the Ukrainian people are claiming it's theirs. And I mean, it's been a mess for centuries. And I think we should give Zelensky as much possible help as we possibly can militarily without actually setting foot there. We have drones, we have all kinds of tanks we can send in there for the Ukrainians to utilize. We can push back the Russians, there's no doubt about it. And this atomic scare of, you know, nuclear war, I seriously doubt that we're on the edge of nuclear war in the Ukraine.
Sure.
They may kill millions of people in that particular area by destroying the nuclear power plants.
Let's hope
everybody remembers Chernobyl.
We're praying. A lot of your articles are nostalgic, I found. Tell me if I'm wrong. But are you missing a bygone day? And is that why you left Colorado for Tennessee in the first place? And in your column, Remember When We? You wrote, trans meant moving stuff, not gender. That was clever.
That's right. No, I look for the good old days. I mean, I just turned 70. I grew up in an area that was a small town. We had one high school. We had morals. We had religion. We had conduct. You never went to a restaurant wearing a T-shirt. You dressed up on for Sunday to go to church. Yeah, I miss it. I miss the father knows best days. You know, I can be nostalgic about it, but here's where it really hit me. When my daughter died and I opened up a driving school and I dealt a lot with 15 and 16 year old kids, 14 sometimes, their ignorance of history, their lack of being taught civics in high school, it just alarmed me. They just didn't get it. And so I wish we were back to an era in the United States that, you know, Ronald Reagan was probably the last great nostalgic president we ever had. Yeah, I miss it. I miss it a lot.
Yeah. And you hit on this, but more specifically in the last national election, only a few months ago, well, I guess it was 2.5 years ago, there was an estimated 252 million people eligible to vote. Approximately 65% or 163,800,000 actually were registered. And out of the 110 million or 67% of that number that cast a vote, or maybe several in the November 2020 election, that would be fantastic, right? Until you realize that's only 40% of eligible to vote. I think Barack Obama's attack on that 18 to 24-year-old demographic is paying some dividends, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely it is. And that group is still loyal to the Democrat Party because they like getting free stuff. But if you ask somebody who illegally comes across the border, or legally comes across the border, or comes in from another country, which my aunt, I'm first generation or second generation American, I guess my parents were first, they will say that they would be very proud to be able to vote in this country. But, and I bet you if we polled them and they were legal and they were registered to vote, the vast majority of them would vote. We take it so much for granted to let somebody else vote on our behalf. And the Democrats have learned that if you take the ignorance of people and you motivate them by not telling them the truth, get them to the polls saying, this is where you want to vote. This is how you want to vote. This is who you want to vote for. That's why they've controlled elections for several years. And they're on the verge of doing that again. I mean, I still am amazed that Joe Biden is the president of the United States. It just baffles me.
Yeah,
I don't
and nothing's been fixed. And you wrote, if you don't vote in the election process, you are just another heckler, just whining like a spoiled three-year-old, demanding attention, fish or cut bait, vote. You also asked readers, what is the easiest of the Ten Commandments to obey? What is the hardest? What do you say to that?
Did I actually ask that question? Or
yes,
you
sir.
Asked me
no, that came right out of your substack.
Gosh, you're really dragging it out of the...
I'm thorough. That's my claim to fame.
All right. Why don't you tell me what I said? Doggone it.
I don't know. Actually, I forgot now because I took notes that was the question, but I wanted to know what your answer
was. It was a good question, wasn't it?
It was a brilliant question. What's your brilliant answer? What's the easiest of the Ten Commandments to obey? Probably not to kill somebody, right?
Yeah, that's right. Not kill. Yeah. That's
and then,
easy.
And the hardest one would be honor thy father and mother, maybe?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's certainly not covet your neighbor's wife.
There's only seven left, but we can move on if that doesn't help.
Please. I did get a little statue of the Virgin Mary for knowing the Ten Commandments, but if you put me on a spot to recite them, I'm in deep trouble.
Okay. All right. Well, I did read it. So you've written several columns about illegal immigration and compared them to gate crashers at a concert. Tennessee exactly. does have an illegal alien problem, and the Republicans campaign against it every 2 years, but numbers keep going up and up and up. What are your thoughts on it here in Tennessee?
Well, you know, it's interesting in Tennessee. I it's a hidden problem. Nobody talks about it. But if most of the food workers, if you go to a certain restaurant, or any restaurant, you'll find that the kitchen is usually run by immigrants, mm-hmm. usually illegal, usually either Mexican or Filipino. It's one of those things where I don't know what it's going to take to recognize the problem. I think one of the big things, and I recall this from years ago, is getting employers not to employ these folks or making their penalties if they're employing illegal aliens. There's got to be penalties. There's got to be some types of enforcement. That seemed to go by the wayside, at least within the last decade.
Now, it did, because borders, now they can get work permits in Tennessee without showing citizenship. So they're going the other direction.
Didn't we have that a long time ago that where they had the farm workers coming across into California and Arizona and New Mexico?
Sure. And Chai Rivera was Chai Rivera was anti that because of that, taking away jobs from legal citizens who were working in those fields.
Well, you know, I mean, if we're not going to take those physicians.
Hugo Chavez. No, who the heck was it? Sorry, I'm blanking all of a sudden on the...
Cesar
Chavez.
Yes.
My bad.
Right. Listen, if people want to work and they're going to go through a process of applying for a visa so we know who the heck they are and we have an ability to identify them, that's a different story. We have so many people that have come across the border in this country. We have no idea who they are. We don't know where they're at. I know you mentioned Tennessee. We had the illegal flights into this state. Mm-hmm. Marsha Blackburn just was up in arms about it. But again, I don't know where these folks went. I have no idea. I don't know how many people are going to be criminals. I don't know how many people are going to be terrorists. That's the one thing that scares me, is we have some terrorists come in, form a cell. I actually worked with the FBI when I was in Colorado Springs, because as a driver's license examiner, I would have people coming in that were really suspicious getting driver's licenses in Colorado. And then I would have to they'd get a permit first, but then I'd have to test them. And there was a couple of cells that were very suspicious that I was an informer. I told the FBI, you got to check these people out. And guess what they did? Not a doggone thing.
Not a doggone thing. Yeah. And then they went from the high profile airplane landings in the middle of the night to busing. And there were, you know, people getting paid to do that too. I was told a fascinating thing, since I'm relatively new to Tennessee too. An insurance specialist told me this, that Tennessee has about 25%, or one in four drivers on the road, are uninsured. They want to raise the speed limit, as we talked about, and add choice lanes to pay for the fast lane. Okay, fine. You're in the business of auto safety 40 years. You think we need those new laws, or should we just make sure everybody's insured?
Well, it's been a problem for decades, uninsured drivers. I mean, the enforcement of that is very difficult, but it goes hand in hand with, if you go to get a vehicle registered or get a driver's license, I believe it's the same in Tennessee. It's most of the places that I've been. You had to show proof of insurance, but they would get temporary insurance cards and then let them expire because they never renewed them. So it's a major problem. HOV lanes, is that what you're talking about with regards to...
They're calling them choice lanes, where you can choose to pay to be in the fast lane, but we would call them toll roads just about anywhere else in the country.
Yeah, toll roads and HOV lanes. I don't like the fact, and when I lived in Chicago, I hated toll roads. They just annoyed me. You know, I had to pay to drive on the road. The same thing with going paying a toll to get across a bridge. You know, that years and years after the bridge had been paid for, which is why they said, well, yeah, we're going to have a toll on this particular area so we can pay for the road or we can pay for the bridge. Then when it's paid for, gee, where'd that toll go? It's still there. Yeah. You know, I don't know. I think
they spent years crossing the Golden Gate Bridge and the prices only went up well after it was already paid for. So I got about 5 minutes left with you, sir. Okay. You know, they say the revenue for this, by the way, is to fill the gap on the money needed to fix the roads.
Right.
I've been on many of these roads already, got a flat tire in Chattanooga, as a matter of fact, and was behind a collision for about 45 minutes. So the roads definitely need help. They're not getting any better. Do you think the money will actually come through and fix the potholes?
No. Well, if they legalize recreational marijuana, or medical marijuana, maybe they'll take the money like they said in Colorado and they'll put it into the schools and the roads, which we never see that happen. What happens to those dollars?
Same with the lottery.
Here's what it breaks down to. You got to learn what your community is all about, whether it's the city or the county. You got to find out who's in charge of the city and who's in charge of the county. You've got to find out what the budgets are, which most people don't know what the budgets are in their own cities. And, you know, we can talk about national politics all we want, but it starts with the local politics and politicians to figure out where the dollars are going to go and where they come from.
Absolutely right. All right. So last question here. What are some issues you're working on, you'll be tackling in your upcoming columns?
I've got a couple of things to talk about. You kind of touched upon it about nostalgia.
Yeah.
Whatever happened to our national pride? Does it only pop up when we have a tragedy? Yeah, so that'll be one of the next things I'll tackle is national pride again.
I look forward to reading that. Well, Tom, thank you for your time. Thank you for coming on with us. I appreciate you. We are at the end here. Please tell our listeners where they can go to find out more about you, follow you on social, or anything else you want them to know.
Well, I think the easiest thing I'd like is people subscribing. It's a free subscription to my Substack page and keeping track of that. I will post it on my Facebook page, any piece that I write for Substack, but it's Substack, Antko, antkow.substack.com or Thomas Antko on Facebook.
Awesome. Well, thanks again for coming on with us.
Well, thanks for the invite, and I really appreciate the time. Thank you.
My pleasure. I don't understand how you ever did without me. I don't understand how I bring you down to your knees. Welcome to the Steve and Steve segment of our show. Steve, good to be in person in studio. How are you today?
Well, I am doing good. The only difference is that Steve's in the studio, but I've got construction on the outside of this. I mean, it is loud. So if you've heard banging and what have you, I apologize for that. Yep. And
we've heard that all the way in Tennessee, so they are banging. Yep. Well, what did you think of our guest, Tom Antko?
Well, it's just nice to have somebody who cares about your community, who is a writer and who's a conservative and has no problem expressing his views. So that was a refreshing guest, Steve. Thank you for bringing him on.
Yeah. Definitely knows the roads. All right, all right. Let's kick this off with the nasty from the UK, Piers Morgan. Actually, a pretty cool guy, but gets a bad rap sometimes for being a little over the top. And, of course, you know, British. Let's listen to this clip.
Linguistic innovators have come up with many alternatives, which are apparently a lot less offensive than the W word. Birthing people. Menstruators. Bodies with vaginas. Individuals with a cervix, chest feeders. These are all real, by the way. And then there's this one. Womps, woman, X, womix, woman, X, and womix. I have no idea. I don't know how you pronounce that. Do you? Former First Lady Michelle Obama used it on her Instagram at the weekend, ironically, to promote women's rights over abortion. One of the slides she shared said, state lawmakers will have the power to strip women X of the right to make decisions about their bodies and their healthcare. Now, those who watched the show last night will know we had some issues with offensive language. So I will say the following word with some trepidation. It's woman, Michelle. Woman. There's no X in woman. What makes this particularly absurd is that Mrs. Obama's post was supposed to be supporting women's rights. Instead, she's trampled on them by pandering to a tiny minority of people who get upset when they hear a word that's been used for centuries to describe people who aren't men. The term womanix, whatever it is supposed to be a marker of respect, I'm told, for transgender and non-binary people who identify as women. But what about the mark of disrespect that it shows to the vast, vast majority of women who would just like to be called women, spelt that way, W-O-M-E-N? Where are their rights in all this virtue signaling language mangling?
It actually should be woman XX as opposed to XY, but that's another story for another day. I want to read this to you, Steve. Actually, what do you think of that?
Steve, what book was it, 1984 or Orwell's? One of them says you change the language. What was the... When you change the language, you redefine a culture.
Exactly.
And that's exactly what they're doing.
Yeah, I prefer Genesis.
Thank you.
Washington Post poll inadvertently finds vast majority of trans people aren't really transgender. Most adults who identify as transgender don't consistently identify as the opposite sex or present themselves as such, according to a Thursday poll from the Washington Post and Kaiser Family Foundation. Only half of transgender adults actually present as the opposite sex all or even most of the time. Fewer than half identified as transgender woman or men as opposed to non-binary or gender non-conforming. Among transgender respondents, 40% identified as trans non-binary and 22% identified as transgender non-conforming. Only 22% identified as transgender women and 12% identified as transgender men, according to the poll. Non-binary people feel that they do not fit into the category of male or female, and gender non-conforming people feel that they do not fit into conventional gender norms. Few transgender respondents said they presented as the opposite sex all the time. 3 in 10 did, compared to 20% who presented as the opposite sex most of the time, 34% who did some of the time, and 16% who never present as the opposite sex, the poll found. Among transgender adults, 78% reported that they had experienced serious mental health problems, compared to 32% in the U.S. overall, according to the Post. The survey polled 515 U.S. transgender adults in late 2022, with a 7-point margin of error. That's pretty big. Let's play clip number 2.
A beautiful day in Morrison, Colorado, as we get ready for the 6th annual Strong Woman Competition. A 2-day-long competition of tests built to push athletes to their very limits. Joining me now is the current champion of the Strong Woman Competition, Strong Woman. Miss Woman, do you feel ready?
Oh, yeah, I'm ready, David. There are just so many amazing women athletes out here today. It makes me so proud.
Now, this is the first year that a trans woman is in the competition. How do you feel about that?
Amazing. I feel honored to be a part of history. I have a lot of incredible trans friends who are athletes, and so we're all inspired this woman's competing.
Uh-huh. And have you actually ever met Heather Swanson?
No, I've never competed against her before, no.
She's not exactly your average trans athlete.
Well, what is an average trans athlete? Honestly, I find that kind of bigoted, David.
Okay. Heather Swanson is actually joining us now. Miss Swanson, how does it feel to be competing today?
I can't tell you how free I feel now that I've started identifying as a woman. Now that I can compete as female, I'm ready to smash the other girls.
And is it correct you just started identifying as female 2 weeks ago?
I'm not here to talk about my transition. I'm here to kick some fucking ass.
All right. We got to pause that. We want to keep it family friendly. Anyhow,
sorry, Steve,
that's
sorry.
Okay. That was South Park. Sorry, kids. Crude and rude cartoon, not for kids, watched by every kid ever, though, sometimes very prophetic. That was 2007.
Oh, gee.
World gone cray-cray update. Woke Department of Defense official Kelsa Wing reassigned after GOP highlights anti-white tweets. You may remember from last week, we went through her and her book sales to the Department of Defense. I did a whole segment on her. Well, like the Stanford associate professor, Miss Wing is out of a job. Self-described woke Defense Department school official Kelsea Wing, whose anti-white social media comments garnered national attention last fall, has been reassigned to an unrelated role, while Wing's job change came after the DOD completed its review. Undersecretary of Defense for Personnel and Readiness Gilbert Cisneros Jr. said it took place not as a disciplinary action, but rather as part of a headquarters restructuring. Sure it did.
Sure. Maybe you had something to do with that, Steve.
Maybe. Maybe they're listening to the Mill Creek View podcast. I hope so. The Post reported that DODEA schools saw a 1,250% increase in the number of Wing's left-leaning children's books in their school libraries since her scandal broke 6 months ago. Remember, she denied it even was taking place. Remember, also, that's a no-no. Naughty, naughty, Mrs. Wing. In October, about 45 copies of books Wing co-authored, including titles such as What is White Privilege and What Does It Mean to Defund the Police, were available in 11 Department of Defense school libraries, according to a Substack report by Open the Books, a right-leaning nonprofit that tracks government spending. As of this month, the number had grown to more than 600 books in 49 Department of Defense schools from Quantico, Virginia, to Yokosuka, Japan, according to the online library database and the report. We are turning back the clock on the world stage. More Neanderthal thinking, but in a good way. World Athletic bans trans biological male athletes from women's sports. World Athletics has banned trans-identified male athletes from competing in female categories in international events. The international governing body's president, Lord Sebastian Coe, said that no athlete who had gone through male puberty would be permitted to compete in female world ranking competitions as of March 31st,
wow.
Reports the BBC. Yeah, right? Do you think transitioning people should compete against females?
Of course not. I think that's why you moved to Tennessee, was it not, Steve?
It was, and I actually just had a conversation with somebody yesterday that they kicked the can on the decision on that again for the fourth time, and the individual who was responsible for it apparently is no longer on the task force, but still a consultant getting paid to teach public schools what pronouns are. Clip number three, please.
News exclusive, a growing number of doctors say they are under threat from far-right activists because they care for transgender patients. NBC News senior reporter Ben Collins has a new story on this posted on NBCNews.com, and Ben joins us now. Ben, your story highlights one doctor in particular, a doctor in Wisconsin, who was targeted on social media. Help our viewers understand what happened to her.
Yeah, so Dr. Catherine Gast, who does treat transgender adolescents, was targeted by several different accounts, libs of TikTok, and also Senator Ted Cruz's account. And Ted Cruz said that she was sterilizing children. This is not something that she does when she treats trans children. She has never done this. But when we reached out to Ted Cruz's team for comment, they doubled down on that, and they asked why we were in favor of genital mutilation. That's the sort of rhetoric that these people are facing right now. Her family, herself, her distant family, all of those people have been doxxed. Her office has received nothing but threats through their phone lines over the last few weeks. It's been a really difficult time since being targeted by these anti-trans activists.
So, Ben, what are the social media sites, what are folks like Twitter doing to stop this kind of harassment?
Twitter says it's against the rules, but these larger accounts, you know, obviously Ted Cruz is a senator, but also libs of TikTok have become simply too big to fail. They have millions of followers, and they literally fundraise off the idea that they are going to get suspended on Twitter. And then there are smaller...
Wow.
So Texas Senator Ted Cruz is an anti-trans activist. That NBC exclusive I just played for you was a total stretch. Remember just yesterday, way back when a radical trans killed three babies?
Yes.
I think NBC enjoyed that. But alas, our woke military didn't get the memo. Pentagon doctors claim seven-year-olds can make decisions to be injected with hormones, puberty suppressants. The DOD doctors claim seven-year-olds are capable of medical decision-making. Dr. Stanley Goldfarb of Do No Harm, an organization of physicians seeking to restore the medical profession to the Hippocratic Oath, disputed the claims made by the DOD doctors, calling them laughable. The notion that seven-year-old children are capable of such decisions is beyond laughable, Dr. Goldfarb said. The existence of a large, perhaps as much as 25% cohort of detransitioners suggest the folly of assuming the soundness of childhood decisions, he said. Well, maybe we'll get less of that in Utah. On Thursday, Republican Utah Governor Spencer Cox approved legislation that would limit access by young people to social media platforms, the first statewide restriction of its kind. Critics have accused social media companies of creating addictive algorithms to maximize use, especially by children and teenagers. Quote, I don't think we've ever seen a time in American history where mental health has been so problematic, said Utah State Senator Michael McKell about the new laws. I hope we see action across the nation. Clip number four.
Eligible to serve and an even tinier fraction willing to consider it. Joining me now is Stu Scheller, a Marine Corps Lieutenant Colonel discharged after criticizing the military's Afghanistan withdrawal. He's also the author of Crisis of Command. Stuart, this really is the chickens coming home to roost moment. I think you predicted it. I predicted it. They want the military to be like, you know, I don't know, Harvard Law School, like a Thursday night seminar where it's no really different from any college campus.
Yes, Laura, thanks for having me on. Bottom line, you alluded to it. This is not a recruitment problem. This is a problem with our senior leaders. Our senior leaders' inability to have a courage, their hypocrisy, it's affecting all other things. You would think a young American would want to raise their right hand, support and defend the Constitution, similar to your last guest talking about wanting to support and defend the Constitution, and have trust in our senior military leaders. But our senior military leaders have demonstrated through action that we can't trust them. And you would be naive to think that a young American isn't getting online, going on the internet, and seeing all the missteps that we can clearly see of our senior military leaders.
I was lucky enough to be at the Michael Murphy Navy SEAL Museum opening out in Long Island today, and had a chance to meet so many incredible men and women in uniform and former SEALs and so forth, and looking at the wall of all these special operators who gave their lives for this country. And I actually got angry. I got angry about what's happening to this military and all their sacrifice and the families who are still sacrificing to this day. We owe them a lot.
That was Laura Ingraham, and now you know why. No courage. This is not a good way to run a country. Stay tuned for my thought of the day. Welcome to my quote for the day. But before I share, I want to remind everyone to subscribe to the Mill Creek View podcast. Just go to Rumble or Spotify or iTunes and hit the subscribe button and follow us. While you're there, go ahead and leave a comment. And thanks for doing it. Oops. Here's all you have to know about men and women. Women are crazy. Men are stupid. And the main reason women are crazy is that men are stupid. George Carlin. I saw a study that said speaking in front of a crowd is considered the number one fear of the average person. Number two is death. This means the average person has to be a human. You've got to be a human. Jerry Seinfeld. Clothes make the man. Naked people have little or no influence in society. Mark Twain. If there are no dogs in heaven, then when I die, I want to go where they went. Will Rogers. Yes, sir. There are three kinds of men. The ones that learn by reading, the few who learn by observation, the rest of them have to pee on the electric fence for themselves. Will Rogers. That's me, I'm afraid. That's it for this episode. Really hoped you liked it. Really enjoyed being back in studio. Thank you, Tom Antko, for keeping a good sense of humor and reminding us laughter is the best medicine after all. Until next time, this is your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor-in-chief of the mcview.us. Peace in our time.
In the air, laughter around the children and the pumpkins at the county fair. They were looking for America behind every turn, flying the very colors that so many love to burn. I'll cruise the countryside.
Any views or opinions represented on the podcast are personal and belong solely to the creator and do not represent those of people, institutions, or organizations that the creator may or may not be associated with in a professional or personal capacity unless explicitly stated.